100 albums. One Vic Vaughn. It's Vic's Picks on the Nick DiGilio Show.
Well, the rain exploded. There we go. And it is time for Vic's Picks. All right, Vic, you've been going through this list. And what do we got for this week?
Number 10, self-titled The Beatles, also known as The White Album. This is their ninth studio album. And I always like to mention the studios. They worked on it at EMI and Trinity Studios in London from late May through mid-October. This is 1968. It was released the next month in November by Apple Records, their own record label. So this was a release right around the time, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, please. We can now call this right around the time would be maybe the beginning of the end of The Beatles, I guess.
Yeah,
so after the release of their album Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, which I haven't heard yet, but it's coming up real soon. It appears on the number one spot on this list we're going through. But so with the White Album, from what I read, the Beatles were trying to top what's now considered by many, not all, to be their best work. They would the best work that they would ever produce. That's not your opinion, correct?
No, my favorite Beatles album is a tie. I know that's a cheap way of doing it. It's Revolver and Rubber Soul.
Commit, Revolver and Rubber Soul.
Okay, if I had to pick one, it would be Revolver.
Okay.
Revolver is my favorite Beatles album.
All right, good. I got you on the record with that one. I haven't heard either one of those, so...
Oh, they weren't on the list?
Wait, which one were they again?
Revolver and Rubber Soul.
They're on the list. I think they're ahead. At least one of them's ahead. I think I have two more Beatles albums to go through. But
okay. Because if they're not on the list of the top 100 albums of all time, then that list is wrong.
Yeah, I don't quote me because I've listened to dozens and dozens.
Right, no,
so
I understand.
Yeah,
I
but
understand.
I don't think so. I don't think I've listened to either one of those yet.
Okay.
I've listened to some good ones, though, some good Beatles ones, some great ones. So I'm also reading about how at this time they were having a lot of disagreements as professionals, as musicians. Ringo had even quit temporarily by this time, and what you can kind of end up with is this. At times, it seems a little disjointed. Maybe the album. But still great songs, right? I mean.
It's a great album, but you can hear in the album, you could hear the band splintering apart.
Yeah.
You could hear the John songs from the Paul songs and even the George songs from the Ringo songs. You could just feel the band separating. That's what it feels like when you listen to it. It's still a great record, though.
Yes, exactly. And that was pretty much what I... kind of my review after listening to it for the very first time was that it was a little disjointed but awesome. Every song I thought was, well, almost every song I thought was awesome, but it was disjointed. At one point, Paul McCartney singing about having in the middle of a public street an intimate encounter. And a couple songs later, I think it's two songs later, John Lennon singing about a very touching and beautiful song about his mother. So it's a disjointed, I think, at times, but there's reasons for that from what I've read, and it's a bit strange, but I love it. I love the album. Many, many classic Beatles songs on this album that some of them that I recognized, but some of them I'd heard before. So although I never listened to the entire album before. It's a double album, right? It's got, I think, 18 or 19 songs on it, but... let's start with Obla Di Obla Da. So catchy.
Right.
So that was, I had to read a little bit about that because it did sound a little Jamaican to me, and it was when Jamaican music was gaining popularity in the UK or the US, in the UK is when, I guess, when Jamaican music was kind of, that was written in a Jamaican ska style. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, very much.
Okay. But it caused a big riff in the studio, this song. I read a big argument, shouting match. An engineer quit over it. John Lennon was not a fan of that song.
No.
In fact.
No, he wasn't.
No. I found it interesting. In fact, I found this really interesting. If you listen to the piano intro, it sounds like Well, I read this. These aren't my words, but the critic I was reading said it sounded like it's a theater-style piano. And I read that John Lennon sat down during one of their recording sessions, and he bangs that out like that in that style. He bangs it out real hard and fast on the piano, and he says, this is the way this song should be played. And they ended up liking it, and that's how they used it, you know, that faster, louder style in the studio. Get a little work here from George Harrison in with this next one, my favorite song on this album, a song called While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Harrison wrote it, and before we listen to it, for this studio version on the White Album, he invited his very close friend that I've learned since studying this album, widely regarded as one of the top couple of guitarists of all time, Eric Clapton, to overdub the lead guitar part for this song. And Tom's got a little cut of it. My Guitar Gently Weeps. Yeah.
Clapton. Yeah. They were more than just buddies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very close. Very close. What do you mean?
Have you ever heard the name Patty Boyd?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I read about this.
They shared a woman.
Yeah. Well, and, not exactly the right same time, right?
No. Well, yeah.
Or maybe. To make sure the record's correct, did they... Because what I read didn't really indicate that they were having like an open relationship.
No, they were. Patty had been with both of them,
right? But
and they had both wrote songs about her. Derek Domino's album is essentially all about that. And there's a song. I don't know if you did. You have Derek and the Dominoes. The that had to be on the list, right?
No.
There's a song on there called Layla.
That's a song by Eric Clapton, right?
Yeah. Well, it's Derek and the Dominoes, but it is Eric Clapton. Yes.
But I've heard that song. You're saying that's about this woman?
That's about Patty Boyd.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you know, my daughter's name, Layla. Play that sometimes.
Well, and okay. a reference to last week, Something is also about Patty Boyd.
That's right.
Wait, what?
The song Something.
By George.
You're kidding.
No, that's about Patty Boyd.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's two amazing songs.
No, absolutely. They were more than friends, man. There was a lot going on between Clapton and George Harrison.
Yeah. Their friendship did not crumble from that.
No.
What I read.
It did not.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. You know what? And also, I just came across this on Facebook yesterday. A friend of mine posted a YouTube video of Prince playing that solo with, I want to say, I saw it yesterday. I want to say it was Tom Petty, but I could be wrong.
It is Tom Petty.
Tom Petty, Jeff Lynne.
Yep.
Okay. I want to say Donnie Harrison was in, Danny, however you say it, was in there.
Well, I'm not going to act it's like amazing. I know who they are.
It's amazing. Well, here's the thing about Prince. Prince was never appreciated as much as he should have been just as a guitarist.
Right.
Because he was an unbelievable guitarist. We know he was an amazing singer-songwriter. That's all, and a great performer. But that guy could play the guitar. And if you watch him play that solo is unbelievable.
He shreds.
Ridiculous, man. Yeah. And that really, I got into that video, and then I got into reading about Prince, and I kind of messed myself up for the next album we're going to do because I didn't give myself enough time. But that, yeah, amazing. That song that George Harrison wrote, Clapton played the lead, and then watching Prince do a cover of it, it's blew my mind. Now, next, here's a little from another song widely regarded there's a lot of stuff written about this song, but it's also considered one of the greatest songs on the album, Helter Skelter. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a McCartney song.
That's a Paul song.
A Paul song. And I learned that there's some thought out there that this Helter Skelter was an influence on early heavy metal.
Absolutely. Most people consider it Some people consider it to be the first heavy metal song ever recorded.
I do. Yeah.
I got chills when I read that because yeah. I just got chills right now. That's really cool. I did not know that. It's considered, this is a new term for me that I'm just now, and since I've read it, I've come across it all the time, reading stuff from critics, but proto metal song.
Right.
It's also considered among the greatest songs ever recorded by the Beatles, from what I've read, by a lot of critics, you know, these statements are all just things I've read. They're not mine. But it's an interesting part of this song's history. And also, this is a kind of an unfortunate connection to Charles Manson.
Right.
I won't go into it all unless you want to talk about it. But yeah, so interesting song, man. I really loved reading about Helter Skelter. And wrap up the discussion on the White Album with another great song from this album. Tom's got it.
Happiness is warm. Yes, it is.
When I was trying to figure out which cut of that song I wanted Tom to get was I read something from a critic who said that last part where Lennon hits that note is just so chilling, and so I forwarded to it, and yeah, that's a great part of the song. It's the end of the song, but Happiness with a Warm Gun. Part of the song's story that I found interesting was Lennon's inspiration for it. It's a direct quote from an advertisement that he saw in an American gun magazine that he found kind of troubling. So he wrote a song about it. He also used some sexual metaphors involving drug abuse. You know, the theme of sex, violence, and drugs. But it's also regarded as one of the best songs on that album, and a delight to go through that album.
Yeah, it's a great record. White Album is a great record. And so I'm trying to figure out what my favorite song on there is.
Yeah, I'm curious.
It might be Happiness is a Warm Gun, which is a song. Now, before we break here for the weather, what did you think of Revolution Number 9?
About the same thing times 10 what I thought when I heard somebody go cookie on that, you know. It just,
yeah,
what can you say?
I mean, it's 7.5 minutes and it is an experimental and crazy thing. Number nine.
I do not understand all of the experimental things, but I'm kind of beginning to understand its value.
Well,
to what we have now,
that's a John song, or if you want to call it a song. And at that time, he was, you know, obviously he was in love with Yoko Ono, who was an experimental artist, and influenced him to do weirder and stranger things, and that's one of them.
Yeah. You know? The way I'm kind of wrapping my head around all of it, because a lot of the albums I've listened to have experimental songs on them, and studio work that was experimental. And the way I'm wrapping my head around all of that is that they're, you know, the experimental songs, I may not enjoy those very much personally, but the way they stretch their imaginations and creative skills during those experimental periods may have produced, you know, the work that they later did that I do enjoy so much. But
okay. All right. We got a break here for the weather. We'll come back. We got another album to talk about on Vic's Picks right here. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up after 4 o'clock, you big dummy. Straight out of context, we don't have any Nick D Show spies this week. And then we've got Fly Jams Friday, all the regular Friday features. We're continuing with Vic's Picks. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Okay, Vic, let's get back to it.
All right. Number 9, Blonde on Blonde by Bob Dylan, the great Bob Dylan. And for you Dylan fans, I apologize, but I skipped this one because it's one I've listened to a lot in the past before because I love it. And I've always enjoyed listening to Bob Dylan, although there's a lot of albums I haven't listened to yet by Dylan. But so I skipped and I went on to the next one. Number 8, London Calling by a band called The Clash. Changed my world as far as music goes. I didn't know a thing about The Clash until this week. This is The Clash's third studio album. And let me just say, you guys, I'm going to need some help on this one because, like I said, I got a lot of notes on The Clash, very little notes on this particular album, which is a double album, just like the other one. So I had a lot of music to listen to this week, and I got crunch time down at the end, and I kind of mismanaged my time. I spent when I started listening to this album, I loved it from the very first song, London Calling. And in fact, if Tom wants to put, Tom picked all the songs for this album, which was a big help. But if he wants to play that one, we can at least, for those who haven't listened to it, go ahead and fall in love with The Clash. Here's London Calling.
London calling to the faraway towns. Now war is declared and battle come down. London calling to the underworld. Come out of the cupboard, you boys and girls. London calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania has bitten the dust. London calling, see we ain't got no swing. Except for the rain and the crunch of thing. The ice is...
I love that song. That may be my favorite song now. It may have knocked Jimi Hendrix's song that was my favorite off. I don't know. I just fell in love with that song. That's the lead-off track. It gets things going. And while I was listening to this album, I was reading about The Clash. One of the things I read was a documentary film. I watched it twice, and I just started falling in love with this band and their story. And like I said, my research went off into the direction of the band. So I have a ton of notes on The Clash, you know, their rise and fall, their manager, who was highly important if you're going to have a discussion about The Clash. I have plenty of notes about each member of the band, but as far as each song, the album, all that, I was just kind of listening to it in the background and studying this band. What do you think about The Clash, Nick? Do you have an opinion?
I love them. I think it's great. I think this is a great album. I think it's actually a really important record, and I love it. And the kind of statement that they made, and the kind of influence that this band had on other bands is massive.
You know, Tom had talked to me about that before I listened to this band, and I did come across a lot of reading material about that. Especially about, stumbling through my notes here. One of the band members, was it Mick Jones? It was. Mick Jones, the lead guitar player, lead vocalist. He and I love his lyrics, by the way, and his style of songwriting. But he went to, and they were friends. He was friends with members of the Sex Pistols. A lot of the band members of The Clash had become friends with the Sex Pistols. But it was Jones who said, after seeing the Sex Pistols' first show, he said, "This is it. This is where music is going." You know, and so, and then, you know, The Clash becomes this. Just, I don't know, how do you describe this band? They're performers. They're you know, eccentric. They were, you know, angry, pissed off, poor. You know, they just were rock and roll, punk rock.
They're the only band that matters.
They're the only band that matters. That's a quote, right?
That's how they were built. They were frequently billed as the only band that matters.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, really? That's another thing that I read about The Clash was that, you know, a lot of the bands that have put out albums that are now, you know, regarded as among the greatest albums ever recorded were not necessarily... Some of them were not necessarily regarded as such at the time. The Clash was regarded as a great band at the time, and then, you know, had such an influence on so much music and other bands. And I loved reading about the way. I'd love to hear either Tom or you, Nick, your opinions of Bernard, because it seems that there's a split. He's a polarizing character, and he was a big, important thing with The Clash because he gave them a lot of the brilliant ideas they had, their attitude. A lot of it stems from Bernard and the way he, you know, instructed the band, or I guess led the band, at least in the beginning. I know as they gained popularity, they kind of, you know, especially Mick Jones Joe Strummer kind of became the leaders. But Bernard had a big, you know, influence on this band, and I was wondering what you guys thought about him. You know,
well, that was those were the days where managers of bands took front and center. Look at the Sex Pistols, you got Malcolm McLaren, you got all these other guys who were running, management. Peter Grant was Led Zeppelin's manager and made as many headlines as as Zeppelin did, and that was the day when that those were the days when the managers were as big a star as the bands themselves.
Yeah, and he kind of has that look too when going through articles and pictures about it. And another guy I came across was Cosmo Vinyl. He was, I guess, the band's personal assistant. But he had a lot to do with their style, which was a big part of the Clash. You know,
right,
he told them what to put in their hair and how to comb it. And so he was another kind of, I don't know, unofficial artistic director, style director, but a big influence on them as well. There's so much we could talk about with the Clash. Not near enough time.
Yeah, it's true.
An amazing band. This album, London Calling, is one of my favorites.
The craziest album that they ever did came next. It's an album called Sandinista.
Yeah,
and
okay.
It's a triple album. It's a crazy record.
That one, Combat Rock. I want to listen to them all now.
Combat Rock was the most commercial success they ever had.
Yeah, I noticed. I skipped ahead and listened to a few songs on that one. And I know a few from that one.
That was their biggest commercial success.
Quickly to show you how little I knew about them. I know we got to go. When I started watching the documentary on the Clash, I kept thinking, I was halfway through it, and I kept wondering when he was going to start putting on the face makeup and the lipstick. I thought it was The Cure. That tells you. I've learned a lot.
Two completely different bands. So, all right, Vic, very cool. All right, we're going to take a break because the news is up with Vic next.